Hello, everyone. Welcome to the newest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm the host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, where I am recording this in quarantine, as everyone's in quarantine right now across the state of Pennsylvania and through most of the country. We're living this situation. And amongst the people who are working on this unprecedented challenge in their country and our world are many elected officials, newly elected officials, and young elected officials, all of whom probably did not never expected to have to deal with something like this and are thrust into leadership in a different way than they had planned. If you've listened to past episodes, and I hope you have, you'll have heard from people from all across the country, from Florida to Alaska, from elections, from seats from mayor to Congress, Senate, judge. And today I'm excited to bring my second guest from California. He is Rigel Robinson from Berkeley, California, and we're going to learn about his experience running for office, what he's doing now, and hopefully encourage you and other young people or people of any background to make a change and run for office yourself in 2020, 2021, and beyond. So with that, Rigel, thank you for taking time, whatever time means anymore. Thank you for calling in to talk on my podcast today.
It's good to be on. Thanks, Tony.
So you are in Berkeley, California, which I think has a reputation, correct?
They certainly do. They certainly do. For better or for worse, depending on who you ask.
Well, and I'm in Philadelphia, and Philadelphia's got a reputation for better. Everyone, we were just talking about someone from CNN, and they always talk about Philadelphia fans abusing Santa Claus. I'm like, that was like a million years ago. I think we've moved up to the Easter Bunny at this point.
Yeah, and it's always a bit of a double-edged sword, because with every piece of a reputation, you know, there's some bit of truth to it, mm-hmm. but you know, the foundation somewhere. But it's tricky. Berkeley, really in a lot of ways, I think pretty objectively, punches above its weight. I mean, it's a city of about 120,000 people. You know, there's not that many places in the world with that size of a population that have the international renown or reputation Berkeley does. But in a lot of ways, that renown is as a progressive utopia, a hippie haven, or something like that. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but that's not to suggest that progressives and Democrats here in Berkeley don't know and see intimately how much more work we have to do every day.
And, you know, it reminds me of during the presidential election, Mayor Pete Buttigieg got tons of attention from a mm-hmm. small town. And not that Indiana is not important, and not that where he was mayor from is not important. But then they had Wayne Messam from Florida with a city population. And granted, he didn't have any money. No one knew who he was. But, right. You know, obviously a much more significant mayor. Pete Buttigieg went further than the mayor of New York City. So
yeah, it's it was a strange race for a lot of reasons.
Yes, well, politics is strange right now, but speaking of politics, you ran and won in 2018, correct?
I did, yeah, November.
So, and have you, it seems like in Berkeley, you can't avoid politics. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, it certainly feels like it. I mean, every year that I've lived here, it seemed like there'd been a particular crisis that just, you know, at least for a moment, seemed to consume everyday life. I know, you know, shortly after the 2016 election, you know, some of the protests and the free speech movements antics with Milo Yiannopoulos got a lot of attention here in Berkeley. And there's no moment that seemed like more of almost a caricature of those ideas. I mean, these political extremes that came to Berkeley to mm-hmm. have their circus. I mean, it was like a stage, and unfortunately that had a real toll on the people here, on the small businesses here that had to deal with that, a campus that had to prepare over and over for this looming probability of a riot. Just a strange dynamic that certainly doesn't happen everywhere.
And yeah, I remember that I was just talking with Ashley Van Orney. She is a city councilwoman.
Ashley, yeah.
Oh, God. See, she's given me a lot of attention to other people across the country on this, and
that's right.
We were talking about this COVID-19 a pandemic and about the fact that in comparison to the pandemic 100 years ago, people in real time are seeing what's happening across the world. I can tell you how Sweden's handling this and how South Korea's handling this. So when there was a riot with Milo in Berkeley, me and my little town outside of Philadelphia, I was following it on Twitter. Like, you can't avoid it.
No, it's totally unprecedented. It was so interesting reading about, actually with Philly too. So I grew up in St. Louis, Missouri, and there was an incredible piece I read a couple weeks ago. It might have been The Atlantic, comparing how St. Louis, Missouri and Philadelphia handled and prepared for the 1918 pandemic. And, that's a really interesting situation to examine. That's really instructive for the situation we're dealing with now. But exactly to that point, now that the world is so much more interconnected, we have no excuse not to learn from our neighbors. We have no excuse not to see what's working and follow their example. And so when we have countries all over the world that have, again, no one was truly prepared for this, but countries that have responded better than we have, the response from our White House is just unconscionable.
And it reminds me of my mother when I think about these things. Like, I put on Twitter a lot, like, if I talked and acted the way that the president does, my mom, who has MS and lives 300 miles away, would drive to my house and run up our steps and slap me in the face.
Absolutely.
But I also know that my mom, and maybe this, I think from following you, this would be true for your family too, has a higher expectation of me than she does of others. Just like I would have a higher expectation of our president, and I would expect that my government and the United States of America would be prepared and vigilant and take action faster than most other countries.
Right. One would hope. I mean, our position as a global leader really just has been thrown away. And so it's been interesting to see the field and the Democratic primary slowly coalesce. And, now we're really starting to feel kind of a sense of unity for the time in the race that it is going to be so essential. I mean, I had a candidate I voted for in the primary. It wasn't who ended up being the nominee, but, the stakes could not be higher. We have an occupant of the White House that has undermined the rule of law and is costing an untold number of lives right now by way of his inaction in response to this pandemic. And it will be a while before we truly know the scale of casualty that is a direct result of the federal government's failure to respond, but we can see where it's going already.
Right. And so I assume that you were the Tulsi voter in California. And
I was a Liz lad.
Well, so Warren was my favorite too.
You too. Hey.
It seemed, and most of my friends, and I felt terrible when she dropped out because of the many women I know and how that viscerally affected so many of them, rightfully so. But I've met Joe Biden in the past, and I've actually had some kind of interactions with his family because of Delaware, and I think highly of him. But beyond Joe Biden, for you, you ran in 2018. What was the thing that made you decide, I'm going to run in Berkeley to be on council and get things done? Because that's a tall order, especially when you don't have a ton of political experience.
Totally. No, it was really strange. And something that I find myself describing to people often. There are no explicit prerequisites for being an elected official. There are no explicit required qualifications.
Well, that's obvious these days, right?
Well, right now, certainly, and then that bar is set from the top. But in a lot of ways, it's a good and exciting thing. I look at my own city council, and between the nine of us, you have a former teacher, you have a former filmmaker, you have a former accountant, you have a former bureaucrat. A whole gamut, which is really exciting. But it also means that anyone could be qualified to be an elected official. And what people should really be looking for, it's not always, you know, a precise lineup of the right prior experiences, qualifications, what have you. You want someone who will be a good listener and will fight like hell for their neighbors mm-hmm. and for their community. And that's, yeah, I think that's been instructive to a lot of people. And it's a little more obvious all over the country now. You know, seeing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez be elected to Congress from a very, very unconventional path. And she is today one of the most effective voices of any Democrat, period, I would say, in Congress. And got there by a route that, you know, a couple of years ago, no one would have imagined could possibly result in someone being elected to Congress. That's all to say, you know, these things happen whimsically and in unexpected ways. My friends and I, we have a joke often of how long it took. The gap between the first time someone told me that I should run for this city council seat when it was going to be up in November 2018, I think that was maybe 8 months before I would actually decide that I was running. It was a long process. So I was in my was going into my senior year at UC Berkeley. So I came to Berkeley first as a student in fall 2014. It had been my dream school for years. My great grandmother went to UC Berkeley at a time when it was really uncommon for women to get a degree in anything, really. Mm-hmm. My grandparents met at UC Berkeley, you know, a long lineage of Golden Bears. And so I came in fall 2014, and just got pretty involved with the Campus Democrats chapter and the student government there, mostly by way of my own frustration. You know, beneath the blue and gold, there were cracks in, you know, what I thought was my dream school, a campus and a student population that is suffering in a lot of ways, that is subject to the Bay Area housing crisis, that has watched in real time as the costs of getting a degree and getting an education have just exploded, and that's leaving a lot of people behind. So my whole, you know, the 4 years I was on campus, I might have regretted this at the time, but it kind of worked out. I mean, it really felt like I was spending more time at City Hall and in Sacramento than I was in the classroom. And, you know, that was learning for me. It was experience-based learning. And, you know, I don't know what I would be doing right now if I had graduated and I hadn't run for this office. But what ended up happening was that the seat was coming up, a seat that, you know, sits right on the UC Berkeley campus and much of the student community surrounding it. And Vermont's people were telling me, you know, this seat has been waiting for someone like you. You should run. You have to run.
And what does that mean, like, someone like you? Because, you know, with someone out here, you know, I don't know what that means when it comes to a place like that.
So the city of Berkeley, it revolves around the campus in a lot of ways. You know, mm-hmm. And the campus town and gown have distinct identities, but the city was founded around the campus many, many years ago. Today, you know, I would guesstimate about a third of the population of the city of Berkeley is students at the University of California, but they have so seldom had a voice in city government, seldom had a say in decisions that would affect them. UC Berkeley has a severe and very acute student housing crisis. They don't have nearly enough dorms for their students. It's really only first years, whether you're an incoming freshman out of high school or a transfer student, so really only first years that are likely to actually be able to be housed in on-campus dormitories. That means the vast majority of students are living in private off-campus housing that isn't administered by the campus. You know, those rents via the rent control or development trends and the creation of new housing is a result of policies that are made at the city level. And time after time after time, for years, students were feeling like they were being shut out of the conversations that affected them directly. And so I think it would have been in 2013, 14, some years ago now, students led an effort to redistrict the city, to redraw the lines of the city council districts, to create as dense as possible of a student district, a student supermajority district, with the vision that one day they would elect one of their own to be their voice in City Hall. And so 2018 was the first election cycle after, you know, 4 years on from that redistricting effort in 2014, and I happened to be around.
And I think, you know, I went to college, as so many other people did, of course. But you you look at so many colleges, and it may be the same, more so at Berkeley than other places, I don't know. But there does seem to be a disconnect between the schools and school towns. I went to school in Poughkeepsie, New York. There are a couple colleges there. And, you know, I imagine that having someone who is from the school get involved in local government really helps make the school, the students more connected to the goings on there, as opposed to just waiting until they're done.
Right. No, absolutely. It's been a beautiful thing. Hey, one of the most gratifying things to me about the last several years has been, I mean, it warms my heart every time I see someone show up to public comments on an item who I know became engaged with the functioning of the city and the governance of the city because of my campaign, because they knocked some doors, they made some calls, or because we met in passing when I was as a candidate, and then I'll see them show up to advocate for a new apartment building that they know we need so deeply in the middle of this severe housing crisis, that may be being opposed, unfortunately, for a number of reasons by some of our longer-term residents, but that this student population deeply, deeply, deeply needs. And that turnout makes a difference in seeing people become more engaged in their immediate community, their local government, in part because now they feel like they have someone in that local government that is speaking directly to them and directly to their needs. I mean, that's everything. That's really special.
You know, when we talk about the presidential campaign, as we did at the start of this, there's all this talk about, well, young people aren't going to come out for Joe Biden, or young people need this, or for the to come out the vote, they need this. You know, and I've been saying, especially after talking with people like you now, Bushra Amawala from Illinois, and a few others, I think that in order to get young people to be more passionate and involved in politics, we don't need the presidential election. We need elections like yours and young people to run for office, not want something out of a 70-year-old candidate for president.
I believe that. I really believe that. You know, I think that the best way to win a national election is to win a lot of local elections all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's going to take.
So you have won a local election, and you know, when you look, people talk about the what they believe about Berkeley. Do you feel like there's a reputation for what to expect as a council member there in terms of policy, or do you just do you feel like you're governing like any other similar city?
Yeah, a lot of both in a lot of ways. But what we were just saying too about, you know, winning national elections with local elections. Yeah, I think my own race demonstrated the truth of that in one particular really fundamental way, and that was just in sheer turnout. So right. It was November 2018. I think turnout would have been up for young people, especially, you know, all over the country for a lot of reasons, but not as much as it was in my race. In that election, I, as a candidate and an individual, got more votes than the total number of votes that had been cast for any candidate for that city council seat the previous time that it was up 4 years prior. That is a massive increase in turnout that I suspect can't just be because of national trends. Mm-hmm. I can only hope that our candidacy had something to do with that. And we saw a massive influx of students and young people in that district voting in a race that they suddenly felt like actually affected them. But to the question you were getting to, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, Berkeley is is unique, is special in a lot of ways. But at the end of the day, it's a city much like any other city, and we have, you know, the same challenges we grapple with, and we respond to a lot of them in many of the same ways. Similar conversations about transportation, about urbanism, about, you know, the place of cars in our cities, about the way our streets are designed, about bike lanes, that cities all over the country are having the same conversations about density and upzoning and you know, how to undo the legacy of residential segregation, the same conversations that are happening in every city all over the country. And, you know, in the same way that, you know, we can notice how different, you know, our pandemic response is because of how much more interconnected this world is today, I think you see a bit of that on every single issue. It is so incredible to be able to lean on networks like the Young Elected Officials Network or Local Progress or the League of Cities, to constantly, it almost seems like every time something innovative and new happens in any city in the country, if you're paying attention, you can hear about it. And maybe it'll work for you too.
Yeah, I love the YEO network. I didn't know about it until I ran for office in 2014. No, 2013 I ran. And I was obviously 7 years younger then. And so I was young enough to be in YEO. Now I'm grandfathered in, and I feel really old about that. I'm sorry. One of the things I like about YEO, and I think about a place like Berkeley, is that, yes, you can take ideas from people like Ashley from Cedar Rapids, like we mentioned, or Spencer Thibodeau from Portland, Maine.
Right.
But you could also be modeling the legislation that, again, someone from Cedar Rapids, Maine, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia could be doing. Is that, do you envision that you have this power, you know, not like Thanos, but you have this power to shape what other cities could do if you are successful?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Berkeley has a lot of firsts under its belt, and there are perks to that, and also it's also a cross to bear in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. If I remember right, I think Berkeley was the first city in the country to adopt curbside recycling, which is impossible to imagine without in a lot of places now.
We only got curbside recycling after I got elected here, and it passed in 2014. So 2015 is when we got recycling.
Well, I'm glad we got there. Curb cuts. That's another big one that comes to mind. It was Ed Roberts who was a quadriplegic. He was a disability rights activist at UC Berkeley and led the charge to create curb cuts so that, you know, people on wheels can cross streets more easily. And the first one was installed, I believe, at Telegraph and Durant in my city council district. And that was years ago. And slowly, by municipal action, that practice was adopted in more places. And then very quickly, it became the national standard. It got folded into ADA. And now they're required everywhere. And it's that first domino that, you know, any city, any place can be that first domino. But in a place like Berkeley, especially, we have just seen time and time again this community sort of serve as a laboratory for democracy in some really important ways.
And while that can be a responsibility that you feel you have, imagine it can also be very freeing. Like, there's a number of things where when we are going to look at something controversial in my town, like, well, are other people doing this? Is there a reason we should be first? Not because we're afraid to, but what are we going to get out of it? Whereas for you, if someone said, you know, we want to pass this thing that's going to protect X group and that's marginalized in this way.
Yeah,
we can do it. Let's do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. No, it's really special here too. I feel like it almost, it's like Berkeley, Oakland, and San Francisco have sort of a rotation that almost feels like a race sometimes. If if there's a policy change on the horizon, somebody probably wants to be first. But more importantly, you know, if Oakland cranks something out, we can learn from that too, and then be that second domino and, you know, try to keep it spreading from there.
Well, and you mentioned
very friendly exchange.
And you mentioned Oakland. You mentioned the other areas in California. And before we started recording, I believe we were talking about COVID-19. And I said my mom in Pennsylvania finds comfort listening to Andrew Cuomo, And I tell her, nothing against Andrew Cuomo. I think he's doing all right, I guess. But Gavin Newsom seems to have been handling this extraordinarily well. In comparison to so many other people, do you feel like your state is stepping up in a very positive way to this unprecedented issue?
I feel so deeply grateful to be a Californian in the midst of this crisis right now. It's tough, especially knowing that so many of the things that make me grateful, I'm grateful for them because they're, especially because they're missing elsewhere. I mean, we are in it's a truly unique and powerful situation for our state to be in, that we are so confident in the impacts of our early closures, our early shelter-in-place orders, that our governor is able right now to send ventilators to states that need them more urgently right now. That's a gamble. That is a risk. And I don't know if that element of that move has been emphasized quite as much as it needs to be. That is absolutely a huge risk to do that. But we acted earlier than, I believe California was the first state in the country to issue a statewide shelter-in-place order. And that is clearly paying off right now. There's a lot of tragedy in California too, but the numbers are nothing like what we're seeing in some other places. And now that puts the whole state in a position to almost serve as a sort of mutual aid for places that are feeling the impacts even more heavily right now.
And I'm looking, there's this healthdata.org website that I check too frequently, predicts when a state's going to peak, when they're going to have how many deaths. And it feels perverse. And a lot of people, especially now on the right, and the weird right, it doesn't seem like a conservative thing. It's just this alternate reality, right? That are like, well, only 2,000 people are projected to die in Pennsylvania from this. Like, that's 2,000 human beings.
The weird right. Yeah, that's a thing, definitely. And yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think to his credit, Cuomo did, because I remember so vividly part of it was an address he was giving. Fighting back on exactly that feeling, that sentiment, like there is no number that is small enough that it's not a tragedy. Every one of those numbers is a person, is a soul with a story, and we're going to fight for every last one of them.
Yeah, and I think, again, going back to the history of Berkeley, I feel like that is kind of the story of Berkeley, right? Is to look at everybody as a person to fight for, and as everybody, whereas that's what it means to be inclusive, is to look at everybody as a person to fight for.
100%, 100% at every level, whether it was being one of the first cities to call for marriage equality, whether it's our approach to housing policy and empathy and compassion for the homeless, is truly believing that everyone should be treated as equals and that we leave no one behind.
So one of the last things I want to bring up, a couple things, but one, first of all, there is this national issue and it now clouds everything, good or bad, and also lays bare everything. But we're asking people to run for office, wherever kind of election they could do, and just take it up for leadership. You're a young person, and I imagine a lot of young people are like, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm not the right kind of person with this kind of thing happening. Why do you think it's important for young people to get involved in this way at this point in time, which is a very different time than the 2 years ago when you ran?
It is, but it's more necessary now perhaps than ever before. I know the mechanics of elections are going to have to change a lot. It is terrifying what we've seen just in the last few weeks, as generally some forces on the right have tried to make sure that elections happen without the proper precautions. I think, bluntly, with the hope that it would help them electorally. And fortunately, and really not that surprisingly, we've actually seen that backfire in a few really high profile ways. People coming to the polls and coming to the polls with the knowledge that one party was willing to sacrifice the people's lives in order for electoral victory, and then voting against them. But the you know, elections are going to have to change. We need vote by mail everywhere. We need the acts of civic participation to be as accessible from home as possible. And I believe that can happen. But it also, you know, we're seeing a reflection of decisions that are being made by legislatures, by governors, that's, it don't always reflect the best interests of their constituencies. And political decisions won't reflect the needs of the people until politics looks more like the people. You know, the country's run by rich, old, white dudes. Mm-hmm. And if you see your needs represented on your local city council or in your state house, that is a good enough reason already to file your candidacy. Yeah, I think everything that I believed and learned in 2018 is exacerbated and amplified today. And I'll share it. It's funny. I don't know. The November 2018, that election day was an exciting day. You know, we took back the House, and here in Berkeley, I was victorious in my city council election. But my favorite news from that election day was watching as friends of mine won in races all over the state, first-time candidates who proved that there were voters that had been waiting for someone like them mm-hmm. all along. I remember Caitlin, a friend of mine, she's just a couple years older than me. She, also a first-time candidate, very young, was running for the school board. And there's three people that all had just moved back to their hometowns in the last few years and were running for office. Caitlin ran for the school board in Petaluma, and she was elected and became the only member of her school board now that actually attended the schools that she's now governing. I remember Brian, who moved back home to Delano, a community in the Central Valley in a much more conservative county. And he was elected as, you know, really a lone progressive champion for immigrants' rights and immigrant issues, and has led the charge to make his city a sanctuary city. And Jocelyn, who ran in Eastvale in Riverside County, and believe upon her election, she's now the only woman, and I think the only Democrat on her city council. You know, all people who, you know, before the election, if you step back and you look at the race, you might not have thought they had a chance because they were so different from everyone else on their city council. But they ran, and they proved that the voters had always been there. There were people who would always have voted for someone like them, were waiting to vote for someone that spoke to them, that spoke to their needs. But until then, that candidate hadn't existed. They were waiting for someone to try. And when they did, it paid off, and they've been governing excellently since.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. I've been so lucky to win elections twice. But it's so much more rewarding to see people who you've watched them work hard and you know that they deserve it, to see them win. That's even more fun, like you said, than watching yourself.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm not even sure if I would ever describe the act of winning an election as fun. It was important, but it's hard to describe, you know, especially as, you know, young people running for these offices. If you're a salesperson, you're trying to sell someone on a product,
right?
And if they don't like your product and they say no, it's kind of nice because it's about the product, you know. Even if it was about you and about your pitch, you can blame the product. When you're running for office, you are the product. It's you, and you can't run from that.
Yeah, as I mentioned with another person on this podcast recently, politics should be a team sport. It's often seen as, you know, Kamala Harris against Joe Biden. What are they going to do in the debate? They're not on the same team. Right. But it's, you know, we should be lifting each other up, not fighting against each other, especially if we're on the same side of progressive politics.
Totally. 100%.
Well, I really appreciate you reaching out. I'm glad that we could talk, and I wish you much success and safety there in Berkeley, and I hope that you can get a lot done there sooner than later.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having me on, Tony.
And if people want to follow you on Twitter, how can they follow you on social media?
at Rigel Robinson. That's RigelRobinson on Twitter and Instagram.
Great. Yeah, definitely follow Rigel. Thank you so much for what you're doing. I hope others are following. Also, follow the YEO Network at YEO Network on Twitter. Follow along to hear from people like Rigel, like Ashley, like Spencer, who are doing so much and hopefully will inspire other young people to run for office as well. Please look back at past podcast episodes to hear from people across the country. And if you'd like to recommend somebody or you want to be on the podcast yourself, email me, Tony Heil, TonyHeil at gmail.com. Thank you so much, Rigel. The best of luck to you.
Thanks so much. You take care.